I am so glad that you joined us for this week's CMDA Matters podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, and here at CMDA Matters, we have been monitoring the development of vaccines for the coronavirus. And for that reason, I have invited as our guest today, Dr. Tara Sander Lee, who's a senior research fellow and director of life sciences for the Charlotte Lozier Institute, which is an organization that has dedicated itself to the policies and practices that protect the sanctity of human life. Vaccine development continues to be such a hot topic in the U.S. and around the world as hundreds of labs around the globe race to contain this COVID-19 pandemic with an effective vaccine. You know, globally, the number of COVID-19 cases is approaching 30 million with over 900,000 deaths. In the U.S. alone, that number in mid-September is over 6.5 million cases and just under 200,000 deaths. Well, I was looking the other day at our freedomtocare.org website, and that website is freedom2care.org, and I noted that the CDC has documented roughly 700 deaths from the coronavirus just among healthcare professionals to date. You know, that sad figure is a testimony to the courage and conviction that health care professionals like you are demonstrating every day as you care for patients. But oh, how we wish that a safe and effective COVID-19 vaccine was already available for all of you on the front lines. Well, just this past weekend, our CMDA Board of Trustees, which is made up of more than 20 healthcare professional members like you, they met virtually in a marathon 11-hour fall session. One of several ethics position statements that we reviewed together this weekend deals with immunizations, as our old statement was updated and strengthened this summer by an incredible and dedicated group of bioethicists who serve on our CMDA Ethics Committee. Those physicians and scientists from all over the country each donate, I don't know, maybe over 100 hours annually to giving you and me solid, biblically based, and scientifically sound bioethical position statements. You can find our current immunization position statement on our website. Just go to our homepage at cmda.org, and you will see under policy and issues our current longstanding CMDA position on immunizations. And actually, Jeff Barrows and I will be discussing that just a little bit later. It's been a long time since I personally thought in medical school about messenger RNA and DNA replication and how God amazingly designed our immune systems to defeat viruses. But today, Dr. Sander Lee is going to take us on a deep dive into the highly advanced technology today involved in producing a vaccine that could potentially protect us and our patients from this coronavirus menace. Well, I invite you now to listen in on the recent conversation that Dr. Jeff Barrows and I had with Dr. Tara Sander Lee of the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Well, I want to welcome to the program today Dr. Tara Sander Lee, who is a PhD with the Charlotte Lozier Institute. And Dr. Sander Lee is a senior fellow and director of life sciences with CLI. I'll use that abbreviation. CLI is an organization dedicated to policies and practices that protect the sanctity of human life. She is a scientist with 20 years' experience in academic and clinical medicine with an emphasis on cause of pediatric disease. She got her PhD in biochemistry from the Medical College of Wisconsin and fellowship training at Harvard Medical School and Boston Children's Hospital. Dr. Sander Lee was an appointed faculty member at Medical College of Wisconsin for over 15 years, where she directed a research lab investigating congenital heart disease in children and served as scientific director of molecular diagnostics at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. I'm joined today by our Senior Vice President of Bioethics and Public Policy, Dr. Jeff Barrows. So welcome, Dr. Sander Lee, and welcome, Dr. Barrows.
Good to be here.
Thank you so much. It's
It's an honor to be here.
So, Dr. Sandra Lee, could you just talk to us a little bit and explain your background, your PhD? Currently, what's your biggest area of emphasis with the Charlotte Lozier Institute?
So, my biggest area of research right now is really trying to help to educate and to help people understand the miracle of life that God has given and that how important it is to protect that life. So that takes me into various different areas, everything from trying to help people understand just how a baby develops ever from conception all the way until they are born. I also am very involved in the bioethics of research and trying to help other people understand just where that ethical line can be crossed, especially in the use of embryonic stem cells, or as we'll be discussing, aborted fetal tissue and cell lines. So, but I also do a lot of work, again, helping to protect the unborn. So really speaking out, and especially on the issues of abortion, so that women really understand what's being done if they make that choice to go ahead and end their child's life through the act of surgical abortion or chemical abortion. So that's really, in a nutshell, what I do on a day-to-day basis. But it takes me in many different directions that wherever God leads.
Quick question for listeners who maybe like me just a couple of years ago didn't know really anything at all about the Lozier Institute. Can you just give us an executive summary about its history and what its vision is?
Yeah, so the history is that there was actually a woman by the name of Charlotte Lozier, who was an early women's suffragist and contemporary of Susan B. Anthony, actually. And she fought hard for women's rights, but she also recognized the importance of protecting human life, especially of the unborn. And so she spoke out about that. The idea is that we would bring together a group of experts and scholars, and we actually have over 60 scholars that are experts in the area of medicine and science and law, that will come together in a united front to support each other and to support basically legislators and anybody of interest to help educate the importance of protecting life from the moment of conception all the way until natural death. And so that's really our mission, to do really good, solid research in these areas and then educate the public and legislators about that so that it will hopefully help to inform the public and then change laws that will further protect the unborn.
Where's the Lozier Institute located?
So the Charlotte Lozier Institute is headquartered in Arlington, Virginia. And so some members are there. A lot of this are dispersed throughout the United States and then travel to Metro Washington, D.C. area as needed. So we are all over the United States, but we frequently go and meet up in D.C. when needed, if we need to hold Hill briefings, although a lot of those now are via Zoom. But we definitely, before COVID-19, we frequently would go to D.C. and meet with legislators, do Hill briefings, testify in front of Congress. I actually testified in front of Congress a couple years ago regarding aborted fetal tissue and really doing what we can to help people understand the issue at hand.
Well, Dr. Jeff Barrows and I last week sort of gave our listeners a little bit of a tease, if you will, just a very brief after having a guest talk about religious objections to vaccinations and how primary care docs and others can handle those. And then Jeff did his research and talked about what's happening with COVID-19 vaccine development. So there is a race for an effective vaccine that's ramped up significantly in the past several months, especially with this Operation Warp Speed program. Could you give us an overview of the vaccines that are leading the race?
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, as you mentioned, there are definite contenders right at the front line. And according to the World Health Organization, you can actually go on their website. They have a draft landscape of COVID-19 candidate vaccines. And they actually list over 160 vaccine candidates Wow. in clinical or preclinical evaluation. But as you mentioned, a subset of these are definitely considered front runners in this race. And that's because they are in phase two or three trials. They are currently, recruiting patients to actually see how their vaccines work within the population. And there are five main strategies being employed to produce these vaccine candidates. And I'm just going to go, you know, briefly through as I kind of talk about the different ones that are at the forefront. So we have vaccines that can be developed using like a live attenuated or inactivated method. We have a viral vector-based method. There's a protein-based method. And then there's also these newer methods that use DNA or RNA as the actual vaccine. And we have more information on our website on this if you're interested. But just to talk briefly about those that are at the forefront, there is a vaccine by Sinovac, which is an inactivated vaccine that is made in actually viral monkey cells. And then we have these viral vector-based vaccines, such as those by AstraZeneca in collaboration with Oxford, also Janssen, also known as J&J, and then Vaxart, CanSino, and then there's also a Merck vaccine that uses the carrier virus VSV to carry the viral antigen. Then there's another group of vaccines that are protein-based vaccines. And at the forefront of these, you have Novavax, as well as Sanofi that is collaborating with GSK or GlaxoSmithKline. And then again, we have these newer vaccines, such as DNA vaccines and RNA vaccines. And I think there's been a lot of media about these, and these include Inovio, which is the DNA vaccine, and then the RNA vaccines are from Moderna, BioNTech, which is collaborating with Pfizer, as well as Sanofi, which is collaborating with Translate Bio. So that's just in a nutshell kind of the contenders that we're seeing at the front of the race and that people are watching very closely.
Well, thank you for that, Dr. Sander Lee. That's helpful, I'm sure, for our listeners. And I also know that some of these leading vaccine candidates are somewhat ethically controversial because of their use of at least two fetal cell lines that have been established from abortions that occurred many years ago. So could you talk a little bit more about that and elaborate on which vaccine candidates are ethically controversial?
Yes, absolutely. So as you mentioned, yes, vaccines can be produced using either ethically acceptable or questionable means. And of topmost concern, as you mentioned, it's the use of these fetal cell lines derived from past induced abortions. And when we talk specifically about the COVID-19 vaccine candidates, we are talking about the use of the HEK293 cell line, as you mentioned, and the PER-C6. And so these historical cell lines do not require ongoing destruction of babies, yet their utilization in vaccine production becomes problematic for those who must choose between violating their conscience or accepting a treatment conflicted by abortion-derived materials. So to that end, we have been closely examining and researching each of these vaccine candidates, especially the top contenders, in order to identify those that use fetal cell lines in the production process and those that do not. And so when we look at these, we find that those particularly within the group that I mentioned earlier, the viral vector-based vaccines, those that utilize a genetically engineered adenovirus vector system that will carry a gene that encodes for the SARS-CoV-2 viral target, often the surface spike protein. As part of this method, it requires them to culture these human cell lines, and they work like little factories to produce large quantities of the adenovirus. And in the case of four of the top contenders that I mentioned earlier, the AstraZeneca, the Janssen, Vaxart, and CanSino, those have all chosen to use these cell lines that use the cell lines that were derived from aborted fetuses, you know, historically decades ago. But it's important to point out that there are other choices. There are alternatives. And for example, animal cell lines can be used, such as viral monkey cells or SF9 insect cells. And in fact, Merck has chosen to use monkey cells. You know, Novavax and Sanofi, you know, while slightly different methods, you know, they are, because they're using protein-based, but again, they need cells and they've chosen to use the insect. So there are alternatives. And these companies, though, have chosen to use these aborted fetal cell lines that are problematic.
That's helpful. You know, as Dr. Chupp already mentioned, we just, in the last week, sent out an email to all of our members, kind of laying out basically the the top vaccine candidates and their whether or not they were ethically controversial. And one of the ones that we listed as not controversial is the Moderna vaccine, which, as you know, is one of the new technologies with mRNA. And I noticed that even on the Charlotte Osher Institute website, you don't list it as ethically controversial. Yet there are several articles on the internet that kind of imply that there is some question about that. So could you address that for us?
The reason that we have chosen to list the Moderna vaccine on the website as licit or not controversial is because there are no cells being used to produce the antigen called spike protein for the production of the Moderna vaccine. It is a completely cell-free system. And so, as I mentioned earlier, there are other vaccine candidates such as BioNTech and Sanofi that are using the same method because they all use mRNA that carries the code for making the SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. There is no spike S protein in the Moderna vaccine. It's an RNA strand that will make the spike protein once in the person that has been vaccinated, not before. But you're correct. There was a paper earlier this year that does mention the use of aborted fetal cell lines, specifically the HEK293 cell line. But it's really important to understand that these cells were not used to manufacture the Moderna vaccine that is currently a candidate. The HEK293 cells were used in experiments described in the paper that demonstrate that the mRNA sequence to the SARS-CoV-2 spike can be expressed in human cells. So what that means is that they basically use these cells as a confirmatory test, which was done separate from the production process. And so we think this is an important distinction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the actual mRNA sequence used in the vaccine production was actually synthesized in silico, meaning like via computer prior to these experiments being done. We wanted to be clear that we don't condone the experiments using HEK293, nor any of cell lines from aborted fetuses, but those tests that Moderna did were done outside of the production process and do not rise to the level of cooperation or scandal, in particular regarding vaccine production or acceptable use by any recipient. So the final vaccine product used to immunize patients, again, was manufactured ethically in a cell-free system. And so that's going to be the product that's going to be given to patients. And we feel that while some of the studies that were done separate from that were definitely problematic, the actual production itself is not. So hopefully that explains things.
Would you mind just elaborating a little bit for our listeners on how these vaccines are breaking new ground in vaccine research and why now? Is it because of massive funding because of COVID-19? Is it because it was just at the right, scripture says at the right time God sent his son into the world? Is it just the right time that we had the right pandemic and these technologies were ripe?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely what you just mentioned, that it was actually the right timing. You know, God's timing is always perfect. And, you know, we can't see the future. We don't know how this is going to turn out, you know, and which vaccine is actually going to be offered. But we do know in looking at these newer technologies that are now, they are perfectly positioned to really make a serious impact on the coronavirus vaccine race. So for, like you mentioned, the DNA and RNA vaccines, and why they're so new and novel is because they are a completely cell-free system, unlike the others before it, that I mentioned, like the viral vector-based vaccine. And so they will carry the code for the protein. The vaccine's not going to actually be putting a protein into the cell. And what's great is that, like I mentioned earlier, these RNA or DNA vaccines can be chemically or enzymatically synthesized in the lab without the use of cells. They can be encapsulated. These lipid nanoparticles can encapsulate the nucleotides to protect them from degradation and promote cellular uptake. And they're non-infectious. The vaccines will be non-infectious. And so what's also important to note is that in particular with the RNA vaccines, while they are new and there's currently no existing licensed human vaccines using this platform, studies have shown that they can elicit immunity against the flu, Zika, rabies, and coronavirus, you know, some of the cousins to SARS-CoV-2. And so there have definitely been studies leading up to this point showing that these have a real potential for working. And I just want to mention real quick that the production is incredibly fast when it comes to these. And I just want to point out to the audience that if you look back at one of the papers that Moderna published, they highlight this, that, you know, on January 13th, Moderna decided on the final sequence that they needed to combat SARS-CoV-2. And then they initiated production the very next day on January 14th. So it just goes to show that the minute that they have the sequence in hand, they can immediately start the production process and they don't have to go through the great lengths like some of these other vaccines have taken.
One of the questions we've received back from several of our members that actually has to do with Moderna and perhaps even the new DNA vaccines is the question about their capacity to change the human genome. Have you read any research along that line either way?
I haven't. Right now, I and my colleagues have not seen any evidence of any vaccine candidate, including the newer RNA and DNA vaccines, any evidence of them changing the genome. So right now, that does not appear to be a concern.
Million-dollar question, as I've been over the last few years being asked questions about immunization ethics and using vaccines where fetal cell lines have been used and in which there are no alternatives available. So I have two questions. What are your recommendations right now from the Charlotte Lozier Institute in terms of those vaccines? And I hope I'll get them right. I think it's varicella, rubella, and hep A, where there are no alternatives. So that's part one of the question. Part two is, with this cutting-edge technology with DNA and mRNA vaccine technology, what are your hopes for how those things might be a game changer, those platforms, for the development now of alternatives to those three vaccines where we have no choice?
We hope that as these pharmaceutical companies and academic institutions move forward to develop any vaccine, that they adhere to the highest ethical standards and that they do not use any fetal cell lines from induced abortions, so that whatever vaccine comes to the forefront, they will service all humanity by respecting the consciousness of all and valuing the sanctity of every human life without exploitation of any marginalized group within our society. So that is our recommendation. So we want companies to make the right choice and to use alternatives that are in hand and to not choose to use these illicit means, such as the aborted fetal cell lines. But we know that from history, like you said, rubella and chickenpox that are currently now on the market and are the only ones available to our kids when we vaccinate them, there is no other alternative. Well, in the case of, I think, rubella, Japan is the only country that currently offers an ethical alternative. So that just proves right there that it's absolutely possible. It's just that the companies here in the United States have chosen not to do so. As a mother, I have struggled with the same issue. So at the end, if you've done all you can and encourage pharmaceutical companies to choose an ethical alternative, but they don't, I, in the end, have decided to vaccinate my child because there is no other alternative available, but because we are unfortunately left with no other choice. But then I think it's really important as parents, as physicians, to continue to acknowledge that the use of these cell lines is problematic and controversial. We need to continue to educate others. We need to educate our colleagues, our parents, and parents need to educate their physicians. Physicians need to be willing to listen. And we need to then encourage and put pressure on these companies. And that's what I ended up doing then. As much as I didn't want to have my son have that be vaccinated, I chose to do so and then used it as an opportunity, a platform to educate. And so I think that's why these newer technologies like the RNA vaccine from Moderna, they really do offer a real hope and potential that if we can move away from any use of cell lines in the production process and that you can offer a vaccine to families that don't contain any illicit cell material, that, you know, that's really a real hope moving forward to combat this disease, and it'll respect the consciences of all moving forward. So I hope I answered your question. If I didn't, let me know.
No, you did. You did a great job. Thank you. Dr. Sandra Lee, it has been a pleasure, and I've learned a lot from your visit and conversation with us. I want to thank you for your time today.
And me as well. I appreciate your time, and I've learned a great deal as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity.
Well, Well, Jeff, I just thought it would be helpful for you, not only as an OBGYN, but also because you went on to get a master's in bioethics from Trinity University. Could you briefly summarize for our listeners what are the guiding principles that they will find when they get online and review our current ethics position statement on immunizations?
Sure, glad to, Mike. I would say that there are many important assertions that the current position statement on immunizations makes. But among them, the important one is that the CMDA recognizes and affirms the important health benefits that are offered by immunizations to society overall. Mm-hmm. And while recognizing that, CMDA also does acknowledge the right of an individual to refuse an immunization. And this is not uncommon, especially for Christians, because of moral reasons, and probably the most common is the fact that there are a few, not all, but a few of the vaccines that are produced by virtue or using fetal cell lines that have been derived from abortions that were performed several decades ago. And those current vaccines that have been produced with fetal cell lines are varicella, rubella, and hepatitis A. So all of that combined together, CMDA in this statement encourages and endorses the development of ethically uncontroversial immunizations that don't raise the question of moral complicity and can provide future health benefits that are so critical to individuals, families, and society through the immunization process. So that's an essence of the current statement as it is on our website.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for summarizing where we have stood. So a rigorous process for our listeners, amazing number of steps, and then finally, actually next spring, when our House of Representatives gets together, the final stamp of approval after review by the members of the House for any position statement. So as you've this summer quite familiar because you're on the Ethics Committee and then heard board discussion this weekend, what does the new updated and expanded ethics statement bring in 2020?
Without going into great detail, I will say that it takes the current immunization statement and expands in greater detail the biblical, the historical, the medical, and the ethical issues that surround immunization and vaccine development. And it does even go a little bit further than that. It goes into what is the role of society and government in development of vaccines? And then finally, what is the role of us as healthcare professionals in our discussions with patients? So it lays the foundation of why we as healthcare professionals should encourage immunizations and the production of ethically pure vaccines.
And so I think it would be good to summarize for listeners that CMDA is nothing if not pro-vaccination, provided we avoid as much as possible those morally controversial vaccines associated with fetal cell lines. Thanks, Jeff, for joining me today on CMDA Matters, both with Dr. Sander Lee as well as explaining our CMDA position on this.
My pleasure, Mike.
Well, as Christian healthcare professionals, we have a unique ability to use our medical expertise to influence our broader culture to make ethical healthcare decisions. It's important for us to understand both the scientific implications of bioethical issues, such as fetal cell research, as well as the spiritual impact such methods have on people created in the image of God. In his book entitled Bioethics, A Guide to Wise Engagement with Life's Challenges, Dr. John Kilner uses case studies to help readers, with or without medical training, to understand bioethical issues so that they can effectively participate in making good ethical decisions regarding healthcare. You can pick up a copy at cmda.org/store or just call us at 888-230-2637 and we'll get a copy in the mail to you right away. Well, as we've been mentioning for the last couple of weeks, we at CMDA are partnering with Dallas Theological Seminary on October 1st to bring you a webinar entitled The Church and Science in a COVID World. This webinar is free for our members, so if you're not a CMDA member, now would be a great time to join. Member or not, you'll need to register to attend, and registration is officially up and running for the October 1st webinar. You can access that through the CMDA Learning Center by just typing into your browser pathlms.com/CMDA. And if you're listening online, you can follow the link posted with this episode of CMDA Matters. Well, as I close, I've heard John Stonestreet from the Colson Center mention how his mentor and predecessor, the late Chuck Colson, would use the word eudaimonia. Eudaimonia, which comes from a Greek word literally meaning good spirit. But it has come to mean, in modern times, well-being or human flourishing, safety and security. Vaccines since the days of Edward Jenner and his development of the smallpox vaccine over 200 years ago have played a significant role in bringing about greater eudaimonia, or health and well-being of the people of this world that God loves and therefore whom we must love. Included in the new immunization position statement for CMDA are a couple of remarkable tables from the CDC which contrast the annual morbidity from various diseases before and after the advent of vaccines. I find it truly remarkable to see the differences that have been made in the incidence of diseases like measles in the 20th century, with over 500,000 cases per year before the vaccine was developed, and then in 2017, only 120 cases reported worldwide. That's like a 99% eradication because of a vaccine. Diseases like smallpox, polio, diphtheria basically have been eradicated, alleviating so much human suffering. We are praying at CMDA, certainly for God to keep changing hearts in healthcare. That's our motto, but also for the successful development of a safe and effective COVID-19 vaccine to prevent more suffering from this plague. One of the scriptures that our ethics committee shares in the updated immunization statement comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 19 and 20, where Paul states, quote, "You are not your own. You, believer, were bought with a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies." CMDA healthcare professionals and friends, we do not own our bodies. Christians have been bought with a high price. And so honoring God by taking proper care of our bodies must matter to you and to me. And what must matter to you matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. We'll see you next week, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.